You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey everybody, we're back with another Bald Move Television, the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. We got some girls talk up real quick, but before that, Jim and I want to have the semi-regularly recurring feature where we talk about who won the week. That was a popular feature, but polarizing feature on when we last did this with Fargo, Better Call Saul, and The Leftovers. Because The Leftovers clean clock except for maybe one or two weeks, and the other fan bases weren't as thrilled by that. But
yeah, it's understandable because they don't like hear the other side.
Yeah,
so much, or they don't know.
If you don't watch The Leftovers, then why do I don't give a shit about this? And usually it happened on Fargo because it was the last one out.
Yeah,
and it rarely. I think it only won the week one, so people were testy. But if you're a fan of just television, I think it's an interesting feature. I noticed that. Fucking Chris and Andy over at the Watch podcast are doing the who won the belt.
Are we aping them?
I think it's the opposite because we've been doing this for the last two seasons for these shows.
Okay.
So I think they're aping us.
Everyone does.
But then I think I was aping Bill Simmons, so it's the Ouroboros is just the snake is eating its own tail. Regardless, having on Bald Move TV, it's neutral ground. It's a fun little way. This isn't, there's just nothing that you get for winning the week. It's just Jim and I's opinion as television watchers and low key amateur critics, who won the week. So, Leftovers, Better Call Saul, Fargo, Leftovers season opener, Fargo season opener, Better Call Saul second episode, who won the week?
I mean, in my opinion, it's The Leftovers.
The Leftovers. All right, guys. We'll see you guys next week. That's it.
We're not going to talk about why. We're not going to say
so,
how much better it is than the others.
It's interesting because Andy Greenwald is listening to his podcast, and he called Leftovers the most important television show on our boxes right now.
Right
now? And he said that's because of the emotional heft. It's because of the artistry. It's because of the acting. It's like everything together. Like it's the most. It's the thing moving the ball further forward than anything else right now. And I broadly agree with that. You don't agree with it?
I mean,
what the hell's more important?
It depends on your definition of important. Like, or important for what? Like, important for society? Important for television as an industry? Important for his ratings? Like, what do you mean by important? Because there are certainly like. There are shows like People vs. OJ or whatever, that Ryan Murphy thing that I would say are probably more important.
But it's not on right now.
Okay. So in this narrow 8-week window.
I think he's broadly speaking of, like, I guess, contemporary time. So, yeah, People vs. OJ might not count since that was last season and it's not coming back. It's going to come back with something. It's American Crime Story. I think it's going to be on Katrina this year. It might be. That might be more important socially.
Okay.
But artistically, I think it's hard to say that there's a more important show on television right now.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with him if that's his definition. Sure.
Because I just can't get over how deftly they go from, you know, haunting imagery like Evie taking a rocket to the face to borderline slapstick to back to heartbreaking all in a single hour. And also...
Yeah.
Nothing there, like in contrast to other things like Better Call Saul and Fargo this week that proceed at, let's say, a stately pace, Fargo manages to feel jam-packed but never rushed.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's not a single wasted moment that's ever happening, but it never drags and it never feels like it's hurrying along and it has tons of faith in its audience and what choir it's preaching to. And there's no better collection of actors who would just crush it on a week-to-week basis. That's why I think it won the week. And in fact, go ahead.
I'm with you on that. I think none of the actors that I'm watching week to week on any of these shows are bad, right? I mean, I've seen some bad acting coming from The Walking Dead in recent times.
Oh,
none of this is even close to as bad as that is.
Yeah.
But somehow, even with a stellar cast of like Michael McKean and Bob Odenkirk doing and Ray Seahorn doing like excellent work over on Better Call Saul, this is Leftovers is head and shoulders above that stuff.
And we're gonna say like when we're talking about winning the week, like you're not gonna see bad performances on Fargo or Better Call Saul.
No, definitely,
they're just not gonna be there.
Yeah.
But that just is showing, and I feel it must suck for the people that just don't get the Leftovers, because it's going to be a rough 8 weeks, because I'm thinking that the Leftovers are probably going to be kicking the other show's asses, and maybe the more interesting thing is going to be who takes the silver medal.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's going to be third runner-up in the Minnesota Bridge Contest?
Right, this is a tough one for me, because I think Better Call Saul had a pretty weak second episode this season.
I think
there were two big betrayals of what I view this series and its characters as, and Fargo didn't have anything like that. Fargo doesn't excite me inherently quite as much.
Right.
But I think it had a better episode this week.
Agreed. Because okay. I think that Better Call Saul took the same formula as last week, where it took its stately slow pace, excruciatingly slow pace, and then lowered the stakes.
Yeah.
And as you said, maybe traded character integrity for a few laughs or a few chuckles at Saul's or Jimmy's expense.
Which is something The Leftovers never does.
No. And whereas Fargo also had the advantage of being completely, I mean, it's not fresh. That's the thing, like, as I read a bunch of opinions and listened to a bunch of podcasts this week, we were not outside of the mainstream, but everybody like, this is an excellent television show, but we're wondering how much longer it can go with being
really?
Andy and Chris were saying, like, essentially this is a season long procedural, which is what we were saying.
Yeah.
And that's fundamentally we got away from procedural television because it's fundamentally not as interesting as the other stuff that's going on in the golden age of television.
Yeah.
So Fargo, even though it's the format starting to get a little creaky, it was all new characters. Mm-hmm. And the pleasure of seeing Ewan McGregor doing his weird, you know, the stunt brother casting, and Carrie Coon sweeping a tactical flashlight around, and
the style's there too. You know,
yeah.
Better Call Saul has its style, but I feel like it was a little stretched thin in this episode. And you know, Fargo definitely has a style, which overall is stretched thin, but it's kind of it's renewed by the new story.
Fargo's style is polyester slacks, and you betcha. Better Call Saul style is shimmering New Mexico desert mirages.
Here's Better Call Saul style.
And no, you gotta have Dave Porter. You gotta have Dave Porter doing his lunar landscapes behind.
Right.
We ought to take one of the music for Mike doing some Mike stuff and put it against you editing a podcast with different camera angles and focusing on your eye and like the hands clicking the mouse. And I wonder if we can make it interesting. You put Dave Porter behind.
I'm sure you could.
And you gotta be chewing your lips. Mm-hmm. You gotta be waggling your eyebrows. You gotta have your ears wiggling. But I agree. I don't want to construe this as criticism breaking Better Call Saul, because it's the bronze medal of the Olympics. There's no slouch.
And I feel
there's no shame in it.
I think that Better Call Saul is probably a better show, in general than Fargo, or at least I enjoy it more.
In the long haul.
But this week, just that wasn't the case.
I'm not sure I agree with that, because first season Fargo, I think, was better than first season Better Call Saul.
Okay. Second season Better Call Saul.
Much
better
than
second season Fargo.
Second season Fargo, in my opinion. But I think that's a lot of people love season two of Fargo. We just weren't those people.
I liked a lot of things about it, but man, there were some.
Oh yeah.
Problems.
So we'll see. I do think that the Leftovers might be vulnerable, because they have to move their pieces around to deliver the set pieces as much as anybody. And if Better Call Saul has a whiz bang Gus moment and Mike moment at the same time that they're taking a breath on the Leftovers, and or you know, Fargo's capable of some of that high action, high pressure, high stakes stuff as well, they might steal a week or two. But my expectation to give this segment stakes is the Leftovers is going to win six of the weeks that it's going to be on.
But to continue with the silly Olympics analogies, you know, these shows have been swinging around the bars for a while, right?
Right.
Now one of them's got to hit the dismount.
Right.
The others can keep swinging and impressing people, but
that's true.
That dismount is the hard part, and I don't know if Leftovers can actually stick that perfectly.
If the Leftovers doesn't stick it perfectly, that's going to definitely leave them vulnerable too.
Yeah.
And also, it takes a bow after eight episodes, so that will still leave Better Call Saul and Fargo duking it out for another couple weeks, I believe.
Yeah.
So that'll leave them room. Anyway, that's who won the week this week. Seems like it's universal for these two hosts anyway. Leftovers, Fargo, Better Call Saul. We'll see if we switch it up next week. Okay, on to other business. I have dismissed Jim and I've brought in Cecily because we're going to recap the very last of HBO's Girls.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this season as a whole and the finale? Let's talk about that and your thoughts on the finale.
I thought it was a really powerful final season. Mm-hmm. I think that she sort of wrapped up all the things that she felt she needed to, except for the last two episodes, which we can get into. What did you think?
I think that, all in all, the pregnancy plot felt like a misstep to me in a lot of different ways, and that, similar to Breaking Bad, they did this kind of choose-your-own ending type, where if you want the conventional girls ending, you can pretend like the goodbye tour is the final episode, and how all the girls kind of agreed to go their own separate ways and found some kind of peace, you know, had a little bit of closure there. Or if you want to, I guess, go with the more Judd Apatow ending, which seems like he was the driving force behind that and behind the scenes, you would go with Latching, where Hannah grows up in a single 30-minute section of being a new mother, being confronted, and she gets through postpartum depression and all that in a single 30-minute episode.
I guess. I mean, we've talked previously about how the pregnancy plot wasn't our ideal of how it should go and how this particular young woman's story doesn't really resonate with me or millennial women, I suppose, in this turbulent political landscape currently.
Because I was listening to Chris and Andy's The Watch podcast on the way to the studio this morning, and they said that this seems like a very Apatowian thing, that growing up is intrinsically tied to the responsibilities of a fairly conventional nuclear family relationship. Like you go from feckless whore to responsible citizen by having a baby. And that's the thing that makes everyone grow up and everyone realize there's consequences. And
you're right. I hadn't realized that. But yeah, I guess that's
Think about how much of that runs through a lot of his works.
It does.
But also it seems like something that Lena Dunham, honestly.
But I mean, he's also has two children, so I could see that he's writing from his perspective.
Sure.
But I don't think that that's what Lena Dunham is doing.
I mean, I think it's scary that if you wait until you actually have kids in the world before you get their shit together.
Right.
Like, I know a lot of people do, but I don't think that's the shining standard.
And she had a moment of clarity, but I don't think that she is a changed person. I think she's still a petulant child who now is in charge of another human life.
Plus, it took meeting a worse version of herself, like this whiny, entitled asshole of this teenager that ran out and said all these awful things about her mother just because she couldn't go be with her boyfriend because she had to do her homework.
Right, or what happens when she meets like the uber soccer mom who's got three kids and wants to tell her exactly how to do things before she bucks that. And she says, you know what, maybe I can leave my baby alone for a few hours because I'm dealing with postpartum depression and my mom and Marnie left me, so I'm just going to go out on a walk because I just can't.
Right.
Is that going to be the next episode if this were going to continue?
like I said, I don't know, because a lot of this stuff where you're presented this young woman who's growing up, and I don't think anyone should be judged on what they do in their early 20s, especially if you have some sort of mental illnesses that you might be on the spectrum a bit, you're overcoming some non-conventional, you know, child rearing techniques that your parents were trying on you. You grew up in Hannah grew up in a room, in a house that had all this roiling resentment at below the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad is closeted gay the whole time. Her mom's, probably at some level realizes that she's settling for a relationship that doesn't have any passion just for safety.
Right.
And then when that even went away, like how we've seen how bitter and angry she was about it. Like that had to have a cost.
She had every right. I think that, maybe not at her husband, but partially at her husband for not being honest with her for all of those years.
But she's also progressive
enough. Or not being
enough.
Honest with herself.
Right. But she's also probably progressive enough to realize it's not, it's not the easiest thing in the world to be an out and proud gay man in this world.
Right.
From a certain generation and a background.
Yeah. And, the thing about the final episode is that it would have fit so much more nicely as the penultimate episode. But I mean, as far as the storyline and development goes, but obviously that could not have happened because she had to have a baby for it to play out that way. But I just think that they could have spent more time in the early part of the season wrapping things up.
Yeah.
I mean, did you feel like in the first few episodes that we're just getting another season of Girls? I don't know. I just feel like whenever you know going into it that this is going to be the last season, I always have so much higher expectations for them.
That might be because I felt like that from the very first episode, this had an air of finality to it and that there were some changes that the girls were going through. And, I don't feel like ultimately, it was entirely satisfying because, again, if my perfect season of Girls, Hannah wouldn't have to get pregnant to have all these revelations about herself. And also, I'm so shocked at how goddamn traditional and conservative this show is, because down to the breastfeeding,
exactly.
Everyone knows the breastfeeding is the best way to do it. If you can do it, you should do it because it's cheaper, it's better on your body, it's better for the baby. But really, the final thing we have to is Hannah mastering breastfeeding, because that's the ultimate judge of motherhood.
Right, after she already came to terms with the fact that formula might be just the way my particular baby is going to develop.
Yeah, and some women give it the college try, and they're still judged and made to feel like they're less than because they can't make it work, or they don't want to make it work, or, I just felt that's another level. And I know this goes on, that women are kind of catty and mean to women that struggle with breastfeeding or choose not to do it.
How do you feel about, with the season as a whole, Hannah was sort of the axis that all these characters revolved around in order to find peace with themselves. Adam had to spend the day with her thinking about how his life could have been in order to want to be with Jessa. Shoshana had to have that meeting in the bathroom that Hannah started for her to say, I can't be around any of you anymore. It just felt like...
I guess, I know, because let's talk about this. Let's get into what will we do this time about Adam. Because I actually agree with how all that resolved, but I'm not sure that I agree with how it was depicted. I do think, and the one that, because most of the times I heard Lena Dunham talk about this season, I liked the episode less after I heard her explain it. Because a lot of the kind of the stuff that I was getting and I thought that they were doing, she wasn't talking about. And she was talking about very surface level that I thought was kind of wrongheaded and bad. And I feel like bad as a man criticizing this woman for telling her story. But the one thing I did think, I saw an interview where she was explaining that, Hannah is important for her to realize that, you had this very intense sexual fuck buddy relationship with this guy, and there was a connection there, and that was real, but that wasn't something that you could sustain long term, and that's not something that was very healthy either.
Right, and haven't they come back to each other a couple of times since then?
Uh-huh.
And I just feel like if Adam especially seems like the kind of person who's aware that it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. But I can also understand why. But I could see
him wanting to go and start this family with Hannah because he thinks that she just can't do it on her own. The truth is that she's a child doing raising a child, and he feels like he's partially responsible for any part of her life, and he does, and feels like he needs to be there.
Right.
That would have made more sense to me.
Right. And he does have this kind of like caretaking but abusing kind of thing to him as well. I don't know. He's an interesting guy. But that's what I'm saying. Like, everything about that episode, like, nothing, like, when they're having that final conversation where they're talking about getting married and stuff, I could see it falling apart, but it didn't feel like an organic experience that you would have in a single day's time.
No, this is
like they're compressing something, an experiment that would have failed over the course of months into a single day, and it didn't quite work for me.
Right. Or, you know, Lena Dunham's idealized version of events or people's lives are that it's only interesting if it's messy. Or if these people are impetuous, right, or making the wrong decisions.
Right.
I would have liked to seen Shoshana more. Mm-hmm. Shoshana make those sort of revelations on her own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, suddenly she's engaged to this guy that we don't know anything about. And, right, you know, Ray just dumps her one day because he meets this other woman. And she's just, I don't know. Maybe the character, or maybe the actress herself is just busy, but I feel like that was one of the more interesting characters throughout the entire series. And
If you've listened to me talk about Girls for all these years, you'll know that I'm a huge Shoshana fan, and I thought she was almost criminally underserved by this season.
Mm-hmm.
And like I fully understand all the decisions she's made, and like she's decided, like, this is the type of woman I want to be, and these women don't fit in that lifestyle, and they don't. Like, I'm
right, but that's someone I'm who's there, actually made a transition that's believable. So right, how do you get there?
Yeah,
that's what I want to see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and like, how do you go from like, I mean, there's some time that's elapsed because Hannah's gone from conception to giving birth this month, but, you know, it's a little bit outside of what I was expecting to see. So Shoshana, because I also taken for granted that Shoshana was starting to maybe rekindle things with Ray. Because she seemed kind of put out that he immediately took to this, you know, her manager who she had, you know, kind of set up as like, oh, this is an annoying person and I don't know how I feel about it. It's going to be uncomfortable. And then Ray immediately hits it off with her and she's kind of bewildered by it. Maybe that's not true, but even if it isn't, how in the hell does she meet this guy and get engaged to him within like a 6 month span? That seems,
if that, yeah,
really fast.
It does.
Really fast.
But Shoshana, it seems to me like the kind of person that I would trust her decision.
I mean, we had like a 6 month engagement, but we had also lived together for 5 years previously to that. So that's a little bit, that's a little bit different. But so yeah, you're right. I would have liked to seen more of that, I guess, journey as well. The other thing is, do you think, cause I think they strongly hinted that Adam and Jessa didn't work out.
How so?
When she was at Shoshana's party, she mentioned that she had been waiting outside for the party to begin since like the middle of the afternoon. And I feel like if she was still with Adam, she would have been doing something at his apartment. She would not have even come
to the party.
Yeah, like the way she was carrying herself, I was like, you compared her how she was at the end of What We Will Do This Time about Adam, where she was kind of like she was so relieved that Adam returned. Wasn't there an
implication that she might be pregnant as well?
Did you get that?
Yeah.
Why?
I forget. Maybe it was she. Did she like peed throw up in a bathroom? Yeah, she was throwing up.
Was she?
Yeah, that's what it was. There was sort of like a hint at her maybe being pregnant as well. But I mean, I don't think that happened.
Yeah, I just feel like that there was a little bit like she had gotten a new wrinkle in her ass and learned something new, and like something hard had happened, and you contrast that to how happy she was that Adam came back, and then 3 months kind of elapsed, and then you got the goodbye tour, and now she's kind of like this broken person is ready to reconcile with people, and the way she was talking about, you know, just waiting outside for this party to begin, I got the impression that Adam was out of the picture.
Oh, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the fact that Hannah was ready to guess. I don't even know because the interesting thing is I've had many times where I've outgrown friends or they've outgrown me or whatever, and we go our separate ways. And I never had that like moment of closure where we're all together and we're like, this is just doesn't make sense anymore.
Right.
Like, what are we doing? We're just hurting one another and we're not supporting and, you know, maybe with the possible exception of Marnie and Hannah.
Right.
Like, I could see them being, you know, remain best. Cause you always like, you know, I've held on to Jim. You know, you've held on to a couple of friends from your, like, you, there's always some people that kind of go on that journey with you and maybe they stay with you for life. But the vast majority, I mean, I don't keep in track of hardly anybody from my high school.
No.
I don't keep in track of a lot of people that even in my early 20s. Now, I've got a better reason than that than most, but it seems like a kind of a universal experience that when you get into early adulthood, you kind of, everything changes.
Yeah. It's, again, just Lena Dunham's La La Land.
Yeah. The only episode that we haven't talked about, because the last four were The Bounce, What Will We Do This Time About Adam, Goodbye Tour, and Latching. The Bounce, which is one of my favorite episodes of the season because it just let Andrew Rannell be Andrew Rannell and be a Broadway star.
Yeah.
And we got incredible. We got to see him showing up for this preposterous, and maybe it's a real thing, but it seemed preposterous, this Broadway version of White Men Can't Jump, where he can do everything but dribble a basketball. Like, he can belt out show tunes. He can do this.
He can dance.
It's so funny because I thought they're setting him up to be like fish out of water when they're doing this complicated choreography and he's just kind of like looking bewildered, but then he just nails it because, you know, he was just processing it. I thought that episode was really, really good. And then, you know, he had so many good moments, like the, I quoted the feckless whores, but I love that.
Yeah. That was
where he
good.
Comes into the bathrooms and be like, guess who got the white men can't jump, you feckless whores. I'll see you tomorrow when I dance this night out or whatever. when I've worn this night out. I thought that was hilarious.
Does that kind of undo all of the Eli and, or Elijah and Hannah stuff from the beginning where she gets pregnant and and he gets upset because she assumes he's just going to stick around, but then she just does leave anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, he was ready to, I think, make it a go with her in New York. But then she ends up, that's the other thing. Like, you can't raise a kid in the city? Like, it's so weird to have.
I think she just got a better job outside of the city, but yeah.
Yeah, but like she's like, she saw when shit in alley in New York, and suddenly New York is this terrible, dirty place that she's just doesn't belong in. And I feel that way about New York City. I don't, when I go to big cities, they're nice places to visit. Like Chicago is just too big for me. It's almost my size.
Right, but it's still.
I like living in Cincinnati. There's plenty of stuff to do, but I don't like, there's also some, you know, you don't have to drive but 15 minutes out of the city to get to nature.
But unlike New York or Miami, let's say, people aren't just shitting in the street.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Jessa points out.
Yeah. I for one have lived 40 years on this planet. I have never seen someone shit in the streets.
Yeah.
So, and that's the other funny thing is you see, like, Jessa has shit in the street.
Yeah.
And she hasn't seen anything wrong with it.
We've seen her pee in the street.
Like, who hasn't shit in the street? And there's, like, people, like, lots of people haven't shit in the street.
You're telling me that every shit you've ever taken has been on a toilet?
Yes. Yeah. Other than when I've camped and it's been in a portalette.
Or I've been a baby. Yeah.
When I was growing up and I shit in diapers, yes, every shit that I've taken has been in a toilet. What the hell?
Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. But yeah, I liked the Bounce. I liked the goodbye. I felt like the Goodbye Tour just was a better ending for girls. Can we talk about the series? So I don't want to talk too much shit about the series because I think part of the fun of girls is complaining about girls.
Oh, right.
And
that's
judging
the whole point.
What they're doing.
And so Lena Dunham said that she wrote a story about herself years in the past where she's making these mistakes and, you know, writing from her experiences.
And a more extreme version as well.
Exactly.
I think.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're all just a bunch of hot messes and it's fun to watch.
Uh-huh. There's never been anything on television.
And if you're
going to
pretend like they're not when you end the series, that's where you made a mistake.
Huh. Well, I mean, I think that they cannot be hot. Like, I think hot messes can grow up.
Sure, but I don't think it happens overnight. It's not one conversation
with
someone
who makes
you become introspective.
You latch your baby on your tit and now.
Oh, I'm a grown up and I'm never going to make a mistake again.
You are all that as woman. Like, no. And not even just the rate of the maturity that I saw. Like, to me, if you take the pregnancy plot the goodbye tour would be a very strong, like, I feel like I know where these, like, you know, I don't know if they're going to make it or not, but, like, I'm reasonably satisfied and convinced of the reality of the growth that these four women have undergone in the 6 years that I've been watching them. You throw in a pregnancy plot and you throw in Marnie's competition for best friend and the whole last episode where Hannah just, and I get postpartum depression. That's the other thing. I didn't feel like this felt like postpartum depression, but I don't know what that looks like. So
I'm pretty sure that's what they were, I mean, without saying it, that's what she was experiencing.
But do you snap out of it just because your mom gives you a tough talk and you run into a terrible teenager and your kid latches on?
No, you snap out of it. Yeah, you just snap out of it once your kid latches on.
Yeah.
And that's how depression works.
What would happen if she didn't have Marnie? Like, cause like, I would have drowned
that baby in a bathtub.
Yeah, I was like, thank God for Marnie. And I was getting so irritated with Hannah because like, it's one thing for someone to be hovering over you and telling you're doing things wrong. But like, when you swaddle your kid and it instantly falls off and this person shows you how to swaddle it for real.
Because they've been reading the books. We all know that Marnie's not speaking from experience. She's coming from the same place that you are.
And there's some things like, you know, every kid sleeps different. Every kid eats different. Every kid's got their own personality. But no kid, there's a proper way to diaper them. There's a proper way to bathe them. There's a proper way to lay them in their crib. There's a proper way to swaddle them. There's a proper way to comfort them.
There's a proper way to make an envelope out of your tit.
Yeah, there's these techniques that work. And for you just to be like, fuck all that shit, I'm going to do it. Like, I mean, I guess you can do that. But to be angry and defiant and shitty while you're doing it. And again, okay, maybe I'm picking on a woman, a mother suffering from postpartum depression, but damn, I don't know. It was tough for me to watch Marnie go through all that. And Marnie's complicated too because she's doing this weird, you know, Tinder stuff and she's doing this bizarre phone sex fantasy with this dude.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get Marnie's a weirdo. I hope she turns out okay, but she's a weirdo. But thank God she was there because I would really fear for that kid. That night that she stormed out, if you know, she didn't have her mom and Marnie there to the effortlessly pick up the slack. And here's the thing that really pissed me off about Lena Dunham. On the after the episode of Girls, she was saying, like, I just love that scene when Hannah came back with pants and no shoes and her mom and best friend are sitting there with a glass of wine ready for her to come back. And they don't
even have to apologize.
No one has to apologize because that's what love. And I'm like, bull fucking shit.
Nope.
Bull fucking shit. You owed both of those women an apology.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe they should be concerned about where you were and why you don't have pants on and all that kind of stuff.
And a police officer escorted you home.
And, like, that, I don't think that's what love is. That is a crazy definition.
Love means never apologizing.
Love means no accountability.
Yes.
Yeah. You can do whatever the hell you want and they just unconditionally love you. So, again, that's yet another example of me liking the episode less after I heard Lena Dunham explain it. But on the other hand, I'm also as I'm saying these things, it's weird because part of me wants to say Lena Dunham should have the liberty to do a imperfect television show and not have it be a referendum on her life and who she is.
Absolutely. If she didn't so closely associate herself with all of those things.
But I still don't think even having said that, that happens to male showrunners.
What do you mean?
You know, the guys that are telling personal stories to them that mean a lot of some like stuff. Like, no, you know, like that they're
like Matthew Weiner writing about men.
Yeah, I mean, literally
childhood experiences.
I mean, that was but that was something that was a very important story for him to tell. And nobody took Don Draper's behavior as no one said that, like, well, Matthew Weiner endorses all this behavior. And this is
I think we need a better example because Matthew Weiner didn't play John Draper and didn't say that I wrote this from when I was an ad guy in the 60s.
Sure, sure. But I guess you're right.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I can't think of any examples right now that I can directly compare this to. But
like Louis.
Oh, okay.
Louis is a very messy show that is very autobiographical and not a literal translation of his life, but certainly a pretty honest look at a version of his life. And there's not endless stories about, oh my God, I can't believe that he thinks this and he thinks that.
Well, I
and
think like, Louis's got an actual point he's making with all of those things.
Yeah, and he's, I think he's more self-aware. Yeah. And he's, you know, not as oblivious about, but the other hand is like, you know, he didn't write that when he was 24 years old. And he didn't grow up as we were watching him do it and had been attacked by, you know, like conservatives hater, liberals hater, feminists hater, men's rights activists hater. Like, it does feel a little unfair to make, I don't know. But on the other hand, she does do things that drives me up the wall.
In real life, too?
In real life, yeah. Yes. Like, there's like, you know, but again, no, I don't think, maybe that is the problem, is she did kind of ask. I don't know. I don't know what to, I don't know how to articulate this because it's like on the one hand, it's not fair to be held up as a feminist icon, but it does seem like she did not shy away from like this whole voice of a generation stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, so maybe they played a clip in this episode from previous seasons where she said that.
But if I was a late 20 something writing a hit television show for HBO, working with Judd Apatow and having this much sunshine blow up my ass, I don't know that I would say no to many flattering comparisons that were, you know, that goes to one's self-awareness and someone's poise and someone's age and all that stuff. But it just feels a little gross that I don't know, that like even I myself feel like maybe this is too critical for what this show is.
I don't know. I mean, I think
none of this is monstrous behavior. And also it's a comedy. Like I laughed almost every single episode of Girls.
I mean, are we talking about in Lena Dunham in relationship to Girls or just Lena Dunham, how she carries herself in real life?
I'm talking about Lena Dunham, the creator.
I mean, she also released an autobiography that had some controversy behind it at the same time.
I thought most of that controversy is bullshit though.
I mean, I don't know.
Like, people want to say that she's a child molester.
Because she stuck rocks in her sister's vagina.
When she was, what, 5, 6?
Yeah.
And she, like, the other thing that people want to hold against her is that she had to share a bedroom and a bed with her sister.
I agree that
and
we can
she
be...
And when she was, like, a 13-year-old, she masturbated while her younger sister was sleeping beside her.
Oh, God, who doesn't? We've all masturbated in really weird places, okay?
Yeah, I mean,
we just
like,
didn't, as long as you don't make it someone else's problem.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, everyone wants to say, like, she's a child predator, that's something deeply wrong. And I'm like, I think that's, you know, I didn't put rocks up my brother's bum, but
I've. It's a child experimenting with their sexuality.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Weird. Like, she just can't win. She's trying to be honest and funny and say things.
I mean, but
like,
here's the thing. You release an autobiography or something personal, you're inviting criticism. And I'm not saying that she deserves it all. I'm just saying it's what you do it for, right?
Right.
You don't release an autobiography.
Can talk about coming home with his 4-year-old's legs spread wide open and she's got her fingers in her vagina holding it apart going like, ah! And like what that is to walk into and nobody's like, oh my God, Louis C.K. is a fucking creepy weirdo perva and he's got some kind of inappropriate sexual fixation with his daughter. But I feel like that people
I mean, it's super easy to draw a line between what is said in the terms of like a joke or a TV show or what you actually write about your real life experiences for that specifically. Hmm. But, yeah, I mean, people have some shitty things to say about Mother Teresa too.
Right. Maybe she deserves some of those things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and being a creator is hard and
people are complicated and it seems like that. She did get a little extra heat that maybe she didn't deserve. And maybe she could have done things maybe she'd been a more perfect conduit for this thing, you know?
I don't think she should have done anything different ever. Okay. She's just being herself.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But not everyone's going to agree with you.
And maybe she's not a role model for everybody. And maybe she wasn't the voice of a generation, but she did make what I think is an important and entertaining television show. Not important like The Wire is important or OJ, The People versus OJ is important or, you know, like that. But like, I do think when you get 10, 20 years down, this will be seen as, you know, I don't know. Do you think this show will be important 10 years down the line? Like important in terms of like Sex and the City important?
Sex and the City wasn't that important, was it?
I think it really resonated with a certain generation.
I don't think they're important later. I think they're important in the moment. Sex and the City was then. Girls is now. Friends was then. But watching reruns doesn't really resonate with...
It'll be a cultural touchstone.
Exactly. Watching Friends reruns doesn't resonate with 20-somethings right now, does it?
Probably not.
Because they don't have cell phones and they're not on Tinder and they're not, you know...
Well, you know what's funny about that is different. I feel like Friends was it appealed to like you didn't have to be from New York or in Brooklyn to appreciate what was going on with Friends, even though that was a big part of the show.
Right.
It was like this fictional, fabulized version of it. Whereas a lot of times, Girls, I did feel like an outsider looking in a culture that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
It felt very these people's attitudes are obviously wrong, and they've obviously got sticks up their asses, and they're obviously making bad decisions. They're obviously being sanctimonious and self-righteous when they've got giant rafters sticking out of their eyes. But that's – and it's weird because there's enough realism that you can't like – sometimes I try to engage with it like Always Sunny where like, well, these are obviously garbage people and I'm just watching them destroy themselves and people around them and it's funny. But there's enough realism and I guess truth in the comedy that I couldn't ever fully disengage with that side of it. But then there was enough of the Always Sunny that I was kept – you know, very conflicted and complicated watching this quote unquote comedy is what I'm trying to get at.
Right. And now that we've had this conversation, I have to say that I feel ready for motherhood and I feel like I'm a very complete person now.
But can you latch?
I don't know. We'll see.
Because like that's such a risk. Like if you take this and you have the 10 months and the baby comes out and you can't latch, then it's for nothing.
Yeah. Then I might as well just throw the baby away. I'll try again.
All right. So yeah, that's girls. Anything else you want to talk about it?
No.
All right. Do we have any idea of when we're going to get you back in the studio?
I will be around for special events.
What about, let me ask you this, cause I don't have time to do a full show on this, but you and I are kind of interested in this, American, Gods and Monsters.
Yeah. American Gods.
American Gods, right?
Neil Gaiman.
That's coming out pretty soon.
April 30th.
And I'm thinking maybe we can do a girl style or like an Expanse style approach where every couple, 3 weeks, we go in and talk about that.
I love that idea.
Have you read the book?
No.
Someone on forum today said it's a quick read.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about maybe trying to see how quick a read it is and see if I can squeeze it in before the show starts.
Yeah.
Or I could go in completely blind.
I don't know. I'm conflicted about it. I did read the Wikipedia.
Did you?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Well, the only reason I do that is because I know I always forget those things before it actually happens.
Yeah.
I don't know why I do it. Just so I just like to understand what I'm getting myself into.
You're the anti-spoiler phobe. You're the spoiler file.
Yeah.
You like knowing what – you like going into something with your eyes wide open.
Yes, exactly.
Because like that's the thing I think is mildly
– And even if I was – I mean the whole reason I even started – you know, reading about it is because of the trailer. The trailer looks fucking amazing.
It looks bonkers, yeah.
So,
and I guess this part of me as a critic now is I'm attracted to bonkers things.
And I've always been super interested in like Greek mythology and, yeah, you know, Norse mythology, which is another, yes, Neil Gaiman book, yes, called North. Yeah, so, I mean, they already had me hook, line, and sinker, plus the cast.
Uh-huh.
What a lineup.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's something we'll cover.
All right, so that's coming up pretty soon. We'll keep you around for that. Holding down Bald Move Television.
Yes.
We'll be on the lookout for the next Young Pope too. And also, like, you know, I think American Crime Story is coming back later in the summer. What's that? That's this Katrina stuff. I haven't seen like an actual. The next American Crime Story is going to be supposedly about the Katrina disaster.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like an analyzation of like all that went wrong. And I if that's a fair and kind of balanced thing, I think that would be really important because that's another like OJ I thought I knew a lot about, but watching that and then watching the 8 hour long ESPN documentary, like I'd never want to see anything more about OJ, but also that was fascinating to see how influential that was in a particular time and point in American culture. And I think Katrina might be the same thing, because we know we have like, you know, the like George Bush doesn't care about black people and like, well, it was actually the Democratic governor who didn't do blah, or, you know, it's like there's all this like blame game, but like it would be nice to see an impartial and honest look at like all, because it's that took multiple, it seems to me like that took multiple layers of shirking of responsibility and bad decisions to make it be the disaster that it kind of ended up being. But I'm interested in that too, so that might be another opportunity for us to get in there.
Feud with Betty and Joan is on right now. We watched the first episode.
I think the finale is this week, right?
Yep, so maybe we'll be able to talk about that some. I don't know. There's all kinds of... So much TV right now.
So much good TV.
But I think that's all we've got for this episode.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us for another Bald Move Television. We will be back early next week for me and Jim and hopefully Levi to break down the final season of The Expanse. Speaking of the final season of The Expanse... I can't help but note that when Amos stripped down to the waist, your vagina turned into an Epstein drive and accelerated that. You at 1G throughout our house.
It did. But that's spoilers for your podcast.
All right. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you real soon.
Bye.